Hey everybody. So we chatted with Charlie Greenberg in this episode. Charlie is a Denver born and raised skier, freestyle skier. So we talked about a bunch of stuff. We talked about new schoolers, social media, his skiing. He's actually a snowcat operator. So we chatted a bit about that. We chatted about his favorite ski brands, J Skis, and a bunch of other ones. And that's pretty much it. Make sure you like, rate, and review the show. That always helps on whatever medium you're listening to it on. And enjoy. Thanks. So we're gonna get going on this thing before Ethan has an aneurysm and can't stand me talking into the mic or moving the mic again. We're here with Charlie Greenberg. Is that right?
Yep.
What's going on, dude?
I don't know. Just talking into a microphone.
So tell the people a little bit about yourself. Obviously you're a skier. How long have you been skiing? How'd you get into it?
So I grew up in Denver, Colorado. I started skiing probably when I was around 2 to 5. Both my parents have mixed feelings about how old I was, but I grew up skiing my entire life. Keystone, A Basin, Breckenridge area. And, kind of really got into like park and backcountry, I guess, within the past 5 or 6 years, and then just kind of really can't stop doing it.
Right. Yeah. And you said you're 21 now?
Yeah, I'm 21.
Yeah. I feel like that's when a lot of people really get into it. It's like 15, 16. That's like when people like decide that like, oh, I'm not going to do a whole bunch of other sports. I'm going to do this in the winter.
Right. You
know? Yeah. And do you do other sports?
No. Or I guess I skateboard a little bit, you know. Try to keep my sanity in the summer.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, team sports just never meshed with me. I couldn't do it, so I just picked up skiing and had my own mental battle.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, it seems like most people that are skiers, snowboarders, and are good at it and really into it don't play team sports. You know? Like, there's not a whole lot of people, I think, out there that actually do that. Which is cool. I mean, it's like, I guess it makes sense. Like, I'm always wondering how you're going to get, like, how the ski industry is kind of going to mix the two one of these days, right? And be a little more inclusive to people, but...
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Because skiing's expensive.
You're telling me, man.
So what do you do now?
So I live in Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Sick.
I drive a snowcat or operate a snowcat for the terrain parks up there.
Sick.
And I'm a ski bum.
Awesome.
I'm a full-blown ski bum.
So what do you do? What mountain is it for? It's for Steamboat?
Yeah, Steamboat. Okay, Steamboat Springs Resort.
Sweet.
Yeah.
How did you get into that?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, here, I'll just go back to, like, how I got my park crew job.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's kind of a fun story. So basically, every year for the Level 1 premiere in Denver, Colorado, I was second in line, and this guy, Eric Samuelson, was first in line for like 3 years in a row. So if you want to be first and second in line at this premiere, you got to get there like 3 or 4 hours early. So we would just get chit-chatting and stuff. And
he
grew up in Steamboat and stuff, and then, you know, never thought anything of it. And then at these Woodward at Copper does these summer sessions where on the weekends, like, anybody can go up, you don't have to be a camper or whatever. And so I started seeing him there a lot, and started chit-chatting with him. And then I was just about to graduate high school, and I was like, man, I'm not really feeling the college thing right now. Don't really know what to do. So, but I'd love to work at a resort. I'd be a lifty, I'll do anything. But, like, the dream is to be on park crew. And then he was like, oh, dude, I work park crew at Steamboat. I was like, whoa, you're kidding me. And then he was like, yeah. He was like, let me like help you figure something out. So he introduced me to the lead snowcat operator, Alec Parker.
Yeah.
I like owe my whole life to both these guys. And so I got introduced. They kind of put in a good word with me to the park manager. I ended up getting a day crew job.
Yeah.
Which is like the hand crew of
park
crew, you know. And then I did that for about a season, but pretty much that entire season, I would work my entire day crew shift, the full 9 hours, then I'd take a 15-minute break, and then I'd go hop in with the snowcat operator, and I'd do a full 8-hour shift sitting in there with him. And then, so yeah, I was working mainly 17-hour shifts. The 8 hours in the snowcat was unpaid, but it was just something that I always wanted to do. I just wanted to be around snowcats, honestly.
Right.
And then the other park snowcat operator ended up having to quit. I'm not going to get into details on that.
Yeah.
But right at the end of the season, and then it was hinted at that I was kind of the only or the best option. And
right.
I just kind of got thrown into it, honestly, both feet first.
And so that's been – so how long have you been actually – like as an operator?
About a year and a half.
Okay.
So not super long, but
how do you like it?
I love it.
Yeah. So what's like, what are your jobs? Like, what do you do as snowcat? Obviously, like, you drive a snowcat, but like beyond that, what do you actually do?
So yeah, every night we'll go out there and we'll groom. I'm specifically train parks, so I don't leave the train parks. Okay. So we'll go out and we'll groom all the train parks, and the half pipe. And then whenever we want to switch out features or whenever things need to get changed, we'll go in there and we'll do that. And, yeah, whatever needs to get changed around, either to keep it fun, to keep it funky, or, like, if something's not right or...
Right, you switch stuff up.
Yep.
How, so Parker obviously is in charge of building the jumps and kind of setting up the terrain park. How... do you guys deal with any of the injury aspect of it, right? Like, people are crashing and bailing all the time. Like, so... how do you guys deal with that, I guess? If somebody eats shit on a jump and gets hurt, are you guys closing it? Are you guys moving forward from it? Are you, like, is it ever on you guys if somebody's getting hurt? Like,
So as park crew, it's a huge weight on our shoulders to build a train park that, you know, if Tom and his whole family come into the train park and they end up hitting a 60-foot jump and they just deck out, you know?
Right.
Like, there's a way to build all of this stuff in a way that you're not going to end up killing somebody. Yeah. I mean, they might go home with, like, a sore leg or something, but
right.
There's a way to go about building all these things, and that's part of your responsibility. But during the day, the way that we do our park crew is our park crew will be lapping the park all day, kind of with guests and just, like, talking to people and stuff. So a lot of times we're the first ones on scene if there is an injury. We're told to not touch them, to just let them be, and then we call patrol immediately and get them in there. Patrol's pretty quick to the train park. They're kind of expecting it. But.
Right. I guess, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you guys keep it fresh then? Like, how do you guys keep it new and exciting in a train park, right? Like, there's tons of parks, especially on the East Coast. I feel like they do this all the time where, like, other than Corinthia and maybe a handful of other mountains, the stuff just stays the same all the time, and they just keep the same lap year after year after year after year, you know?
Right.
So how are you guys, what influences you guys, I guess, when you're building stuff?
So the lead builder, Alec, he's a big skateboarder and stuff. So I think he has a bunch of ideas from the, from like skateboarding and skate parks and stuff like that, and trying to like influence that into snow, which is kind of fun. And then, honestly, with every train park, it's just stealing everyone's ideas.
Right.
You know, I mean, I look at Sugarbush a lot, and I get a lot of inspiration from that because their parks are absolutely off the charts, out of this world.
It's pretty crazy. That's one I always forget about, but like when you go there, it's crazy. It's so sick.
Yeah, I want to go there so bad.
Do you get out to the East Coast ever?
No, I've never been.
Really?
I want to go bad.
So that's definitely, hit me up when you're out there. We'll definitely have to make some laps. It's a pretty... everything's closer, kind of. I don't know. Colorado's weird because, like, we were driving through and we were down in Vail yesterday, and then there's just so many resorts within a range, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And home is kind of like that, too, but I don't know. I feel like they segment themselves a little bit differently, right?
Okay.
Like, here, everybody's aware of every resort, right?
Yeah.
But at home, everybody's like... screw this, I'm only going to Mount Snow, or I'm only going to this place, or I'm only going to that place. Do you guys have that, like, attachment to your home mountain here the same, or is it like you're really doing everything?
So there's kind of an attachment to that, but it's not really one specific mountain. It's mainly either you like Vail or you hate Vail resorts. that's kind of our version of that. Is there's a lot of people that absolutely hate Vail resorts,
right?
And then there's a lot of people that are really okay with it. I live in Steamboat and I'm not affiliated with Vail, but
yeah,
I don't know.
How do you feel about the whole Vail thing?
Keystone's really fun. But I don't know, I'm not super excited on what Vail's doing with the industry. I think what Altera is doing, which is who's doing this Icon Pass now.
Right.
I think that's really cool because Steamboat's under the Altera thing.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to see that they're letting us keep doing what we're going to keep doing.
Right.
They're not trying to change our resort.
They're not taking over.
Right. Like Vail goes in and they'll tear down an entire village and redo it in their way. Which, I mean, there's definitely a market for that, and I don't want
There is, and we were talking with Donnie O'Neill, who's the editor at editor-in-chief at Freeskier magazine yesterday, and he was saying, like, it's cool because a lot of these areas need help, right? The towns need help.
Yeah.
So, like, they bought out Okemo, right? Okemo's going to get gutted, pretty much, and then, like, they're going to have brand new higher-end infrastructure, and the businesses are going to benefit and all this stuff, but... And this is a point that I literally thought of as we were talking, is like, what happens if they go and they tear this stuff down and yeah, it's better, but then Vail's like, oh, this investment's not worth it anymore, and they leave.
Oh yeah, very true.
You know? So that I guess is my worry with it. I know that's kind of like a pessimistic way to look at it. It's not like I want to assume the best, but
right.
I guess it's still smart to accept the worst or expect the worst. So I don't know. So Altera's kind of just letting you guys do whatever. They haven't said anything. They're just like basically like, you guys do your thing and keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of their policy is they're like, we're not changing what you guys are doing because it obviously works, you know?
Right.
And every resort has its own feel and has its own vibe and has its own way of going about things. It makes every resort individual and great versus trying to make a Vail resort here, and here, you know?
Right, just the same thing.
No cookie cutter stuff, you know? It's just trying to keep every resort great in its own way.
Yeah. I think that's cool. And, like, we were walking through Vail, the town, or the little, what's it called?
Their little village.
The village, yeah. And, like, the dude that was walking us through, Chris, was like, oh, yeah, Vail Resorts owns that. There's, like, three things in there that Vail doesn't own. You know, it's like a Lululemon and, like, two other things. Like, it's just insane that they have their hands in everything. So, like, it may not say Vail on it, but you're feeding the monster, I guess, to an extent. and which is fine. I get it. It's business, right? And I guess people look at it like, and I think people look at when Vail buys things as like, oh, that business was doing poorly and now it's going to be better, whatever, whatever. But I guess that's not always the case, right?
No.
Stowe sold for, I don't know how much money, but like, it was like $98 million or something like that. It was a lot of money for a ski resort, you know? So like clearly there's some value in that resort.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could, if you gave me $98 million and were like, I want your podcast, I'd say, okay, you know, it's like, so it's not like, I don't think it's a failure necessarily.
Right.
So I guess it's interesting to see. And like, obviously on New Schoolers and on all these pages, you see like just everybody shitting on Vail resorts.
Vail does not catch a break. But
yeah. It's tough.
I mean, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see the longevity of these Vail resorts, you know?
Yeah.
Because I could see Vail being this massive higher power, and then they just get too greedy almost in a way. And it'll just be interesting to see, like, 50 years from down the line or something.
Right. Just and they just kind of monopolize the system, and then, like, Vail owns 80% of the resorts or something like that.
I mean, in Colorado, they do.
Really?
Yeah.
So what do they own in Colorado?
They own Keystone, Breckenridge, Vail, obviously.
I don't even know they own Breck.
Own Breck. They own, what else do they own? I'm having a bit of a brain fart right now. They're affiliated with Arapaho Basin.
Yep.
Gosh, what else do they own?
They own a lot. Either way, that's three huge ones. Yeah, I mean, that's like the
heavy hitters in Colorado they own.
That's so crazy.
And then I might be wrong on this, so I hope I'm not, but I heard a while back that they can't own copper because then it would be a monopoly in that area.
Mm, which is probably true.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
It's super close. They don't own Loveland, right? Loveland's a family-owned.
Right, Loveland's still family-owned, which is really cool.
Yeah, Loveland's great. That's every time we come out for OR, I make five runs at Loveland no matter what. Like, I'll skip my morning meetings. I'll cancel everything until like one and go skiing at Loveland.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's a good mountain.
Shout
it's
out
really
to
fun.
Loveland. I don't even think, do they have a park there? I don't think they even
They actually do, and
do
it's actually
really?
Pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, they kill it.
They confuse me a little bit. That mountain confuses me a little bit, I think, because you got to take like nine lifts to go places. Like it's like a zigzag kind of. You got to go up to this one, down to this one, over to this one, and then like you end up in a spot. And it's cool, especially for people that don't like go there often, like me. Like, so I'm like every time I'm like, oh, this is brand new to me. Like, right. Even though like it's basically probably the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Loveland's cool. Yeah, dude, I don't know. It's happening, and it's obviously it's happening on the East Coast too. Like everybody and their mother's buying everything. Like,
oh yeah.
Our when I was growing up, like the big park scene was at Blandford Terrain Parks, which is like Blandford is like I called New Jersey the armpit of America because that's what people call New Jersey at home. But like Blandford's like the armpit of Massachusetts, kind of. Like it's really really rural. There's not much going on. Ethan and I were joking, like there's one police officer that drives a pickup truck and holds a shotgun. That's like their police force in Blandford, you know? And like, so it's really cool, but like everybody from the Western Mass area goes to Blandford. Mm-hmm. And they just got bought by Butternut, which is like not a big resort, but it's like, it's probably the size of Loveland in terms of like, you know, in relation to other mountains. So it's like if Loveland bought the next smallest mountain, I guess.
Okay.
So because Blandford like couldn't afford to open their doors anymore, but that was the spot. Like it's such a small little hill and they used to have like 50, 60 plus foot booters like at Blandford. And you'd literally have to get off the lift and just nuke it. Like just go completely straight from the lift. And it's like halfway down the mountain. You're just going as straight as you can so that you can clear that thing. And there's like rollers built into it and you still probably won't clear it.
Oh geez.
It was wild, man. That's yeah. Blandford, man. I don't know. Shout out to Blandford. They didn't open at all last year because their lifts haven't been updated in 7,000 years. So they like, and because it was a club, so like it was a ski club, they called it. It was Blandford Ski Club. So you buy a lift ticket, you're part of the club now.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to adhere to a lot of the regulations that a normal mountain does because they're a club.
Oh,
interesting. So like so many of the safety regulations, so many of the guidelines were just like not.
Just out the window.
Out the window and not really up to date because they didn't have money to function. It was either open or update things. You know, it was like one of the two, especially because on the East Coast, like winters have been coming so late lately. Like we don't, when have we been getting first snow? January? Like, I mean, we've been getting the first snow, like a dusting early and then like it'll be gone. And I mean,
will it be cold up to that point? So like you guys, it'll can be make cold snow maybe, but
yeah. Oh yeah. You can definitely make snow, but for a smaller hill like Blandford, if there's no natural snow, it costs so much money.
Oh yeah.
Like,
no, it's insane how much it is to make snow.
Do you guys do a lot of snowmaking out here?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's, I guess it's getting bigger and bigger on the West Coast. Like for us, it's like always been a staple. Like it's a thing that we know happens no matter what. And without it, I don't know, 80% of the mountains wouldn't be able to open.
Right.
And probably more. Like, you'd be, I don't know how a lot of these mountains do it. Like, Mount Snow, I was reading something, and my memory is going down the drain this week because I've just been, like, regurgitating information on this podcast pretty much all week. But, like, Mount Snow spends so much money on this new pumping system that, like, pretty much is, like, an on-off switch for snow blowing. So, like, they have the most snowmaking capability of any mountain on the East Coast now.
Wow.
And it literally, like, and it's just this huge water source at the bottom now. Like, they've always had this big lake, but never a way to get the water from the lake to the top.
Okay.
So, now they hooked up this new system, and it's literally, like, they were like, yeah, you know, we're super psyched. We hope we don't have to use all of it, but whatever. And I think they went through three times what they normally go through early season. I'm sure that's not the right number. I'm sure somebody's gonna email me and call me
something crazy.
It was ridiculous, dude. They like, they just had to blast so much man-made snow so that they could function.
I mean these past 2 years for us in Steamboat have just been rough.
Really?
And yeah, the amount of snow making that we've had to do is out of this world.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, snow making. You know, it's important for sure, and like, I don't know. I don't know what everybody's plan is going forward because you can't do that as a mountain. I don't know how they're making money, you know. And
I mean, in the terrain parks, I don't know how. I'm really happy that I have a job in the terrain parks because I love it. But like financially for a resort, I don't know how they justify it, to be totally honest, because it is insane the amount of snow. There's no way they're making enough money off terrain parks these days, at least.
No way. I mean, but like at the same time, though, terrain park, everybody gives park kids shit. For not, they don't spend money, right? Which is reasonable. Like most of everybody that's a park kid, I guess, to a certain extent or at a certain point in their career, has to kind of fend for themselves. Like you gotta make your gear last as long as you can. You gotta like really drag everything along. Either you buy stuff used on New Schoolers or you find stuff on Craigslist or you take hand-me-downs and you kind of make it work.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, they're probably the most dedicated group. Like there's not a whole lot of other groups that will straight up be skiing a patch of snow that's 5 foot by 10 foot wide just to hit one rail, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, there's not, normal skiers are not on the hill skiing one patch, taking their skis off, and then hiking back up to ski that patch.
Normal people aren't doing stuff like that, you know? Yeah, park riders are a special breed, you know, the dedicated.
So how have you transitioned kind of from doing park stuff to backcountry stuff? Like, what's the...
I mean, I don't know, it just kind of came natural, I guess. It was like... Yeah. I don't know, jumps in park are fun, but you should do this into a powder field and it's way more fun.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And then I don't know, it's just like the most pure way of skiing, I guess. And there's something about powder and backcountry that just kinda gets you
get psyched.
There's just something about it.
Yeah. There totally is. And like, I get, but luckily most of the people that listen to this are skiers, so like they get that feeling. Like, and everybody kinda, like, your skin kinda crawls a little bit thinking about it. Like, it's like
yeah, a little bit.
It's awesome. But it is interesting to see how many park guys will go from park to backcountry.
Yeah. You know? I feel like it just has to do with in the backcountry, you can find stuff that's as big as a park, as a park hit, or even bigger, you know?
Yeah. And it's scarier. Like,
it's real scary.
Yeah.
There's nothing more scary.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. Just like, I hate using the term like adrenaline junkies. I think that's the dumbest term ever. I think it's just people that really love to huck their meat off of stuff.
I like that. I think maybe that's a better term. One of these days someone will invent a term better than both of those, you know,
right?
Other than meat hucking and adrenaline junkie. So, but it is that though. Like, I mean, honestly, like, adrenaline junkie sounds a little like you like to race cars or something like that.
I like to light myself on fire.
Yeah, right, exactly. That'll give you a rush of adrenaline for sure. Like, and I mean, there are definitely people that like that kind of stuff, but they're very limited. I don't know. But everybody has that feeling, right? Like, people that are really into the backcountry, people that are really into doing bigger stuff in the park, like, they have that feeling of, like, I just want to go and set it, see what it feels like. That floaty feeling, like, when you're in the air, kind of, or even just, like, cruising through a powder field is, like... It's a totally different feeling.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. So what else, what do you do in the summers here?
Ooh. I spend a good amount of time skateboarding.
Okay.
And then in the summer, Woodward, they haven't done it this summer because they're doing a bunch of lifts and stuff, but every weekend they'll have public sessions where basically they'll build a whole rail setup. And so yeah, I'll spend pretty much every weekend doing that.
Yep. So Woodward Copper, how do they keep snow going there? Is it on a...
So they just pile it up.
Really?
Yeah, they just do it in a huge pile. So for the one at the base of the mountain, they just take their entire half pipe, their whole 22-foot half pipe, and just push it all into one pile and just let it melt all summer.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's amazing that they're able to do that there, and I don't even know why they do it. I don't know how they function.
I don't either, but I'm happy about it.
I am I'm glad too, dude. I know tons of people that go out there. Like, Peyton O'Connor was one of the first guys that we had on this podcast, and he used to be a coach there, and like, it was like, it's awesome, man. Like, I mean, it's just a ton of fun to be able to go out and do stuff in the summer. But that being said, you have places like Hood that are like available too. So I don't know. Yeah. It's hard to compete. But they do it somehow, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Growing up here and just being here, it's definitely changed my game.
Right.
You know, just being able to ski nonstop.
Right. Do you work in the summer here too?
Yeah, so I was working for Steamboat Resort doing what we call trail crew, which you think would be mountain bike trails, but it's not. It's clearing all the ski trails with brush cutters.
Oh, cool.
Which is basic, for those people that don't know, it's basically a weed whacker with a saw blade on it.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly. You can cut down some thick stuff with those things.
Really?
Yeah.
I need to get one of those for my yard, I think.
You know, do it.
Yeah, that's the move. So that's what you do for the summer, pretty much?
Yeah.
Cool. How do you... Are you living by yourself out here? Like, are you just... You're solo out here?
Yeah, so I live in a house with three other guys.
Yep.
I forgot to add this to my story earlier. So when he was like, oh, I have a job on park crew, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, well, I need to figure out somewhere to live. And then he was like, well, the house that I grew up in, my dad's about to move out, so we have a room opening up. And then I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the universe or whatever's out there. Just like, dude, you need to go.
Yeah. Like, but make it happen.
Yeah. So, yeah, I live in a house with three other guys.
Sick.
And
how's that?
it's living with three guys. It's
hard. I'm doing pretty much the same thing now. Yeah, like I kind of get the feeling. It's like it's a pain some days, and some days it's great, and other days you want to kill everybody, and it's like, or like other days it's like the best thing ever because you're just like hanging out with your buddies, you know?
Yeah, for real.
So, so what's like, I don't know, what's your game plan? Like, what's the end goal for you? What do you want? Like, where do you see yourself in a few years?
I'd really like to either kind of move up at the Steamboat Resort, maybe into like a park manager position, kind of run those, or I'd also like to move into working for one of these contracting companies like White Industries or SPT or something like that, where you travel all over the world building things like the Olympics and stuff like that.
That would be sick. That's a job I think that a lot of people don't think about that even exists, right?
Oh, yeah. But it definitely does.
So what's, how do you get to that point?
Just knowing people, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's pretty crazy how like this industry is like that. Like, you know a guy, you get a job. Like,
oh yeah, that's all it is.
It's insane. So if anybody wants a job in the industry, just find a guy to know.
Yeah, just start talking to everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody and anybody.
No, yeah, like for real. Like, and like honestly, like I texted one night, we came out here, we only had three interviews like lined up, and we were like, we'll either, you know, just mess around the whole time or we'll find other people to interview. So like I shot a couple text messages as I got here to Laura Obermeyer and to Chris Bivona and like a couple people, and they were all like, and I was expecting nothing, right? Like I expected nobody to have anything, and then all of them text me back like five names, and I'm like, oh my God, I gotta do like 10 episodes this week or something like that. So it's sick, but like there are so many people in this industry, so like you just gotta ask, because if you don't ask, then I don't know, you're not gonna know.
And like the thing about this industry is like everybody has been that person that just needs help.
Totally.
You know, so like 100%. Everybody's always willing to just like reach out and just be like, come on, like, let me help you, you know?
100%. Like all of the, I mean, when we first started this, like, it's like, I'm reaching out to people, I'm sending emails. Like, I'm like, oh, come on, like, you know, get on the show so we can help grow it. Like, get this thing off the ground and, you know, get it rolling. But like, that's what it is. Like, so those people that help you, like, you know, like, I don't necessarily think that we needed anything, but at the same time, without those people, the show doesn't exist, right? Without people coming on, the show doesn't exist. So everybody needs somebody, and like I'm super grateful to everyone that's come on and like been involved in it, because it's a process, man.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So what do you got planned for the rest of the summer? When does the season officially start? So like a lot of mountains, like there's restrictions based on land permits and leases. Like Jackson obviously has like a land lease basically, and that's how the mountain functions. When does Steamboat start their season roughly?
Steamboat starts every year November 25th.
No matter what?
No matter what.
Okay.
I mean, they make it, or we make it work no matter what.
Okay.
But the season out here in Colorado, so A-Basin or Loveland will be the first ones to open. They'll open late October.
Really?
If it's cold enough, they'll open like early October. I remember skiing October 16th.
Really?
And then then like Keystone will probably open like mid-November.
That's pretty sick. Like there, yeah, it's pretty crazy. We were driving towards Vail yesterday, and like it was raining down low, but it was already snowing up at the peaks.
Oh yeah.
So like it's, I mean, that's great, I think, right? Like hopefully we continue that trajectory and we get a cold season, right?
That'd be nice.
I think the worst is like is getting a season where it's cold and you don't get any snow.
Yeah.
Right? Because then everybody's just chilly and angry and yeah, cranky. Right. And then you're like, everybody's an East Coaster across the country pretty much, because everybody on the East Coast seems to like just be grouchy all the time. And I don't really, I get it, I guess, because like the cities will all be pretty cold. Like, and you'll just be like, winter sucks on the East. I don't know why, but I feel like it sucks more. Like here, I've been here in the winter. I've been a lot of places in the winter, and like everybody's pretty happy and everybody kind of does their thing and they accept the cold, even if it's like freezing, you know? But like on the East Coast, it's like that bone chilling cold and you're just like, fuck this, I need to get out of here. Like I need to move and do something else. Like,
yeah,
it's wild. But yeah, no, you definitely need to come out to the East Coast and check some stuff out.
I want to so bad.
It's pretty cool. They're doing a good thing with the park idea. The backcountry scene is growing. I mean, things are just like, I don't know, things are kind of starting to come together there, I guess.
That's awesome.
So what do you do anything with New Schoolers? Do you use New Schoolers? Do you hate New Schoolers? What's the feedback? Cause we always get a lot of like people that I know either hate it or love it or don't use it or whatever.
I mean, I love News Coolers, yeah. I guess. I mean, I grew up in school because it was one of the websites that wasn't blocked because it had school in it.
That's true.
So I was just watching ski videos in math class. Sorry, Mom. In that sense, like, I love News Coolers. I think, like, they could do a little better job updating their platform almost.
Yeah.
Like, it's been the same website since I started skiing.
It has been the same website, and there's just more ads on it, I think. And it's a little funny. Like, David Zorko, I've talked to him a few times. He's, like, he's basically, like, the marketing manager, I think, is what his job. I'm sorry, Dave, if I'm fucking your job up, but that's basically what he does, and, like, so we'll eventually get on there and do, like, a little ad with them and do some plugged space with them, but they definitely need an update, right? Like, websites are getting so far ahead, I guess. Yeah.
But then there's something also, like, beautiful about that. It's, the originality. The exact same, you know? And there's something where it's, like, every time I get on there, I just want baggy pants. But then I'm, like, I'm an adult now.
5XL t-shirts, yeah, yeah. You got to dress like a functional human being.
You wear a large.
Yeah. At best, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. I wear a large, but I guess, yeah, there's...
I'm still a part kid at heart, so he's got to be a little big, you know? just a little big.
A little baggy, yeah. How do you feel about New Schoolers in the sense that, like, it seems like it's almost a hate platform a lot of times, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's, but I guess social media, and we'll get into that too, like, social media kind of is in general. It's like, it's a way to just hate. But how do you feel about that? And, like, are you a contributor to the hate, or do you just want people to, like, be psyched on stuff?
I never contribute to the hate.
Yeah.
But there's something about me that supports the hate, and then there's something about me that doesn't support. Because I remember being some little kid thinking I was sick. And posting a 360 on News Coolers, and then people being like, "What are you doing?" You know, yeah. And I was like, "Oh, I was stoked on that." But then there's also something where I feel like that kind of hate and that kind of there's a dislike button on News Coolers that's ruthless. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's something about that, like, that kind of really pushes people and their abilities to, like, another level because they're like, I just want to do good on New Schoolers.
Right.
You know, because...
Oh, that's the thing for so long.
Yeah.
People were like, I want to be New Schooler famous.
I know. And then with this past season, like, I thought... I didn't really think much of putting my edit on New Schoolers, and then we ended up doing it, and then it made video of the day.
Really?
Yeah. And then I don't know, it felt like I won an award or something. I was like, oh, my God.
It's true, though. Like, it's real recognition.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it was huge. It was definitely really cool, and... I don't know. There's something about New Schoolers where it's just pure honesty.
Yeah.
You know, which is great because then when you do get compliments and people are about it, then you know it's genuine.
Yeah.
But
it's true.
Then there's also just, there's got to be kids getting discouraged on park skiing just because of this.
There's a plus and a minus to it. I think it makes people a little rougher around the edges because, like you said, like, you put up an edit and you're like, when you're like 12 and you do a 360 and people are like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
like,
right.
What's up, dude? Like, what, like, you're an idiot. Like, and you're like, oh, man, like, I worked really hard on that, you know? But it's, I don't know. I really like New Schoolers for the fact that it is, there's a place for hate, kind of, and there's a place for liking stuff. And, like, I think people are pretty honest on it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And there's not as much of, like, on Instagram, it's a bunch of just random hate just so that people will, like, click on their page
or,
like, do this. And New Schoolers is not like that. Like, if you hate something, you're going to say you hate it, or if you like something, you're going to say you like it.
Right.
And there's no, like, it is pretty raw, and it's definitely pretty, like, it is ruthless, but at least you feel the honesty with it, kind of.
Yeah, definitely.
So how do you feel about the social media side of it?
Social media, like, in general, and I think social media is really great, especially with skiing for just athletes and stuff, just to have a way to get out there and stuff. I think the one problem I have with, like, Instagram and stuff with skiing right now, or at least park skiing, is there's so many edits going out on Instagram that it's like, and it's so frustrating because, like, you can't pause it or, like, look back at it like, oh, was that sick? Was it not?
Yeah.
And so it's like, then there's these, like, it's almost like in skateboarding where there's, like, Instagram skaters, there's, like, Instagram skiers now.
You know?
And it's going to be interesting to see, like, kind of with, like this guy Crypto Skier, I think.
Yep.
Off the wall. And I think he's, like, going to be the next big thing, you know. I think he's going to blow up here within this next season, or at least it looks like it. But, like, I'd see him as, like, an Instagram skier that really kind of, like, made that leap into just, like, really actually being somebody.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's interesting to see like what catches people's eyes and stuff, at least in park skiing. And it seems like the weirder you get with park skiing, the more hyped people are getting it.
Yeah.
There's
going to be a wall, I think, that people run into pretty soon. Like, it's just a little too weird, man. Like, but that's
getting close.
With pop culture, too, it's like that's kind of how it is, right? You know, like weird shoes and weird clothing and weird stuff is like what gets picked on. Like, I bought these fucking ugly ass, like, whatever these things are at the at the Nike outlet the other day, and Ethan hates them, and I'm sure people hate them, but I think they're sick and they look like shit. But they're like, that's like almost like one of the cool things lately is like being a little weird, right?
Definitely.
So how do you, so let's get into how much effort does it take to make an edit, and do you feel like the effort is worth it at this point?
I think the effort's worth it.
Okay.
Or at least, so last season was like my first full edit that I ended up doing.
Okay.
It takes a lot of effort.
Yeah.
It was the entire season of filming. And then I can't, shout out to Tazi, my filmer. He sat for at least 60 hours watching me try to land tricks.
Really?
Oh yeah.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I mean, it's just a mental boxing match with yourself.
Because,
you know, you're not getting a trick and you don't want to be like, I'm calling it. Because your filmer just sat there for 2 hours to get nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just this mental battle. And it's pushing, you got to push yourself, because then you can't put out an edit with like the same stuff people have seen before, you know? And
right. Yeah, it's true. So do you feel, I mean, do you feel like it's worth it because there's so many edits right now and there's so much content on the internet that when you put it up on social media or you put it up on New Schoolers or whatever, it's almost like gone right away.
Yeah, it just disappears into the
right
into the
abyss. And then you have it and it's cool, but and it's for yourself almost that it's cool, but it's almost like it's underappreciated, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, one of the things that I've kind of learned with skiing is, yeah, you got to make yourself stand out a little bit, you know? You got to separate yourself from the crowd in a way, you know? Whether it's dressing funky or having like your own quirky weird style or
right.
whatever it may be. Like with me, I ski a lot in like a NASCAR sweater.
Really?
Just because I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, and then it's also kind of, I'm a part of this crew, it's called the Steam Boys.
Okay.
And it's just like a small crew that we have up in Steamboat, and it's just kind of grown in popularity.
Yep.
So that's kind of a way that you can get content out there through like a group of people, and people can follow your group. Whether they're actually into you or not, they're still going to see your stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess so they can follow. I'm looking for you. Do you guys have an Instagram for the Steam Boys?
Yeah, it's Steam Boys Worldwide.
Steam Boys. There you go. People can tune in while I'm looking up.
Yeah, get
Steam
in there.
Steam Boys World. Am I spelling Steam wrong? How do I spell Steam?
Oh, sorry. It's STEAMBOIZ. Sorry.
Oh, there you go. Dope. All right.
Yeah.
Now I got it. All right, cool. Yeah, definitely follow the Steam Boys on Instagram, on the interwebs.
On the worldwide.
Yeah, on the worldwide. On the worldwide internet. It's it's so wild how there wasn't an Instagram 10 years ago, and like now it's like the thing that people...
It runs everything.
Runs people's almost. Lives. There's yeah. people's jobs that are Instagram.
Yeah, no, literally.
Tons of them.
Not making like a lot couple, more money than me.
Tons, making a lot more money than anybody. Dude. Like, it's like, you can be... I don't even understand it, but I don't know. It's not a thing that I ever really want to do. It's not a thing that I ever have any interest in doing, I guess. It's... I don't know. I don't even want to think about it. Favorite ski brand?
Ooh.
Point blank, skis only. What's your favorite ski brand?
It was HG Skis.
You're wearing an HG t-shirt.
Yeah. RIP HG Skis.
Yeah.
You know, they were by far my favorite skis
and
I ever
And they're not
rode.
Doing anything anymore?
They had to close the doors.
Really?
This past summer, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, now we know.
I know. Yeah, they were the best skis I ever had by far.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I was just really into what they were about, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were. So what's the new favorite?
I don't know. There's a company in Steamboat called Harvest that I'm kind of really into right now.
Yep.
Definitely ON3P.
Yeah.
I feel like that's everybody.
Yeah. Right, ON3P now. Stuff is pretty, it's pretty bomber. We used to sell it at the shop that I work for, and like, I don't know, we just, we didn't end up working out super great with them, but it's the stuff, the product has always been excellent. Mm-hmm. And I have zero issue with the product. You know, that I think some of the management and some of the people that are in the company are a little tough to deal with, but that also could be me. I could be tough to deal with. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah, it could be either.
I think you're easy to deal with.
Yeah, well, yeah. You're not like, I'm not paying you anything, right, you know? Exactly. So it's also a difference. Yeah, like,
yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit different, but I mean, in this, yeah, I'm super easy to deal with. But
yeah.
Yeah, in business, I guess it's a little bit different.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, O3P's, I don't even, what does O3P even stand for? What does that even mean? Like, what is O3P?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
You gotta be a scientist to know what O3P
is. Sure,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's like the molecular structure of the ski base. I don't know. Anyway, so what do you ski on for boots?
Right now, I'm gonna be shamed. I'm running full tilts right now.
What's wrong with running full tilts? Now it's not cool to run full tilts?
It's just, you're apparently a child if you run full tilts.
Really?
You're just not like a man. You're not like you're not running a 130 flex, so get out of my face.
Yeah, oh my God, dude. Not everybody needs a 130 flex. This is like
I'm not heavy enough.
Yeah, this is my public service announcement for people that think that not everyone needs, like, I'm 220 pounds and I can ski pretty good, so like I need a 130 flex. Not everybody needs a 100.
Right.
If I was 150 pounds and was ripping, I would not be skiing 130 flex, you know? So it's like you just straight up don't. It's weight. It's not just like you buy the high-end boot because you're cool and you got the money for it or whatever. I mean, I don't know. That's dumb.
I don't know. I tried the I have money, so I'm going to buy the nicest boot ball game. And then the $250 full tilt is just my way of going at it.
Yeah.
It just works with my foot. I don't know.
Yeah. See, they don't work with my feet at all. Like, they murder my feet. But there's a lot of people that, like, it's the only boot. Like, it's the only boot that has a true cult following.
Yeah.
Like, people will come into the shop and they're like, do you have full tilts? Yeah. Do you have my size? No? All right. And they leave. And it's like, no. Somebody else could come in and say, oh, do you guys sell Lang? And we could be like, ah, no, but we got Nordica. Like, I mean, we sell Lang too. But
that is really true. I never thought about that. It's
wild, dude. Like, it's
literally has
people straight up will, like, look at you, go, okay, and turn around. Like, it's like, it's the only brand where people do that. And that's like, and Line used to be like that for a little while until they've had some issues with DLAMs and breaking. And
I was one of those Line kids. Yeah. I was full cult follow.
And stuff then, is sick, man. It still is pretty cool, like, for the All Mountain side of things. And they still have a great park team. And I'm not, by no means am I shitting on Line. I think they do a good job. But, like, and they're the innovators, right? Like, I mean,
Jason Leventhal.
I know. How do you feel about J skis? I guess that's a good question.
I actually had two pairs of J skis.
Yeah.
I loved them to death. They were, I had pretty much their like first runs.
Okay.
I had literally his second ski.
Yep.
So I had a few durability issues. I think that's all been figured out now.
Yeah.
Like, I have friends that have them now. I think J skis is really cool. I think what he's doing is really cool with kind of the limited runs on everything,
right?
So you feel like you have something special, you know, because you do. And I think that's really cool. I think with like what he has going on, I think he could be getting a little more funky with what he's doing, you know. I'd love to see kind of what's happening in snowboarding with like the fishtail boards and like crazy stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know Line has a Pescado,
yeah,
which I wish I could afford.
Yeah.
That
is expensive.
And yeah, it'd be really cool to see like J skis and stuff get really funky with what they're doing.
Try some new designs.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe turn around a split tail and have it up front, and you got split tips. I don't know.
Screw like, it. Do a 2x4. Put some bindings
That'd
on
be
it.
Fire. Don't do that.
No, don't do that.
No, it'll be cool. I think we're hopefully gonna have him on next month and chat with him about some stuff.
That'd be sweet.
I don't necessarily like the. I like the business model. I want to hear him explain it to me, I guess, because I don't get it from the retail side of it. Like, we talked to Meyer Skis the other day, and like they were like, yeah, our model's like, we need to sell to everybody. You know, we need to sell to direct to consumer. We need to sell to retailers. We need to sell it out of our building. We need to sell it any way we can sell skis, because it's the ski industry. You
right.
know? Like,
yeah, that's
not everybody
how it is.
Buys skis. There's only so many people. Why limit yourself? So that's, I guess, my main question for him. I don't hate him, and I don't hate the brand. I like what he's doing, and I think he's a smart guy, but I also think that like people look at him as like a role model and like a god kind of in skiing, and I don't really know if I understand it, but maybe he'll make me understand it.
I mean, I feel like in park skiing he's kind of a god.
Don Juan,
he's
the guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's the dude in the garage with the grind plates. You know,
he's and it's like he is basically what Jake Burton was kind of for snowboarding.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where like you push it, or like, I mean, there's a lot more than just Jake Burton, I guess. Jay was kind of alone in that
Yeah, no.
In completely. That battle, kind of, but, you know.
I mean, same idea.
Same idea. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's Jake also had $400,000 that he got left and started the company with. So I don't think Jay had that. And that's definitely a lot of money to start a brand with. And that's like where I start to lose a little bit of respect for Burton, I guess, is like that dude had a lot of money to start. Like,
yeah.
But that being said, he also had the idea to push snowboarding and that was what he wanted to do. And that's intangible.
So yeah.
I guess it's the same deal with Lion and Jay Skis. And I'd probably sell my company too if, you know, K2 Corp asked me to buy my brand and you could still be on board a little bit and still run with it. Yeah.
I mean, definitely. I definitely see why he pulled out.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be hard to see kind of your baby just kind of getting thrown around.
Yeah.
You know,
at least it's K2 though, right?
I mean, yeah.
K2 is a fun company and that's like, people always give them shit because they make their stuff in China and or Taiwan or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like the American ski company, you know, which is weird, I guess. But they're also like they're business people and there's no other company point blank. I don't think there's any other company that spends as much money making sure things are fun for the people that are involved with their brand.
Very true.
And that's like that's the most American ski brand thing you can do, you know, is Ooh. Like make sure people that like to ski are skiing on your stuff and really having a good time.
Very true.
So that's I don't think there's like I think it's a good partnership for sure. And they still kind of let Line do their own deal. So, but yeah, we'll see what happens with this J-Ski thing. I just don't know about it. And I don't know how I feel about it. And honestly, like I haven't even skied the skis, so I can't really talk shit. I can't really say like anything's super bad. I can't say anything's not durable. We get stuff in. They're like one of the only skis that people don't buy either from us or from Evo and have it mounted at our shop pretty much. Like they bring them in and they're like, you can't it's the same thing as Full Tilt, right? Like you can't talk me into anything else. This is what I wanted. This is what it. I like. People feel attached to it. So there's something to be said for that, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess we're going to wrap this thing kind of up here. So tell everybody where people can find you on Instagram, New Schoolers, find your crew, whatever you want to plug. Now's your time to plug.
Okay, cool. So yeah, on Instagram, I'm at @Uncle_Charlton.
Okay.
Legally, my name's Charlton. So
really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. On New Schoolers, it's Uncle_Charlton.
Yep.
That's kind of all I do for social media. Okay. Our crew is Steam Boys Worldwide. It's STEAMBOIZ Worldwide.
Yep.
I had to spell it out on the table right there, making sure I was doing it right.
That's awesome.
That took me a second. Other than that, I don't know. That's pretty much all my places I'm at.
Awesome. And what's you're gonna be here mostly in Steamboat for the season? That's kind of
yeah. Fun. I'll be in Steamboat for the season. Yeah.
Sweet. Awesome. Let's jump off this thing then, huh? It was good talking to you. Thank you for coming out.
Yeah, it was good talking to you. Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Bye. So that was our episode with young Charlton, Charlie Greenberg. It was a great episode. He's actually a super funny kid. I'm glad we got the chance to get him on. Shout out to Laura for hooking that up. I'm glad we got to meet with him. As you can hear, we're still in the airport. So we're doing these intro outros here on our way back home. But make sure you follow him on social media. He gave you the rundown of everything that he does in that last episode. And make sure you follow us at Out of Podcast and let us know what we can do better. Email me, adam@outofpodcast.com, and we can hopefully we get some good feedback. Thanks, guys.